may have a voice note update on the Table Mountain fire, but some of the reports of people in and around the Newlands area this morning saying that there's been a steady drizzle or a light rain that could be aiding in dousing that fire on the back slopes of or the slopes of the back Table Mountain, but there has been a fire burning there since Saturday above Skeleton Gorge. This is believed to have been caused by a lightning strike, so fires there started naturally. In fact, let me just quickly get this update quickly by Justin Buchanan. He's the fire manager at Table Mountain National Park. Let's just have a listen quickly.
The current update is that this drizzle this morning has certainly helped us contain the spread on the back table, although there are still hotspots and flare-ups that have been recorded throughout the night. The areas we can't access on the slopes above Kirstenbosch through to Newlands remain smouldering, and we'll assess later in the day. At this stage, we still advise hikers to remain off the trails, even with the drizzle this morning, but we will send staff up to assess the conditions of the trails. We are worried about trees and potentially rocks that have come down off the mountain as a result of the fire. And once we've done that assessment, we can then determine if we're going to open the trails between Constantia Neck and Newlands. However, the trails on the back table remain closed.
Okay, so that's the latest update. The light rain in the Newlands area is aiding in firefighters in bringing that fire under control. But there was a question asked on John Matham's show 2 days ago. I know that he had Megan Taplin, the park manager of Table Mountain National Park, responding to this. But a question of if fires are started naturally at a time of the year when it is cooler, and particularly if we know that indigenous fynbos and forest requires periodically natural fires to occur to help with seeding, should we concentrate in putting out these fires? There was an answer by Megan Taplin yesterday saying that, yes, while this particular fire does not endanger any lives or property, it is within the legislation that if there is fires on property, whether it be public or private property, that authorities should do their best to try and bring that fire under control. But let's speak to Jasper Slingsby, senior lecturer in plant ecology at the University of Cape Town. Justin, Jasper, really appreciate your time. Firstly, give us a picture of the types of vegetation that we find currently on the back table, and how it relates to natural fires in this part of the country, the Southwestern Cape. Good morning, Jasper. Jasper, you need to take yourself off mute, please. Jasper Slingsby still has himself on mute on the Zoom link. And as soon as he takes himself off mute, we will have this conversation. Because it's argued that the indigenous forests are fire resistant, and that, of course, the life cycle depends on fires taking place periodically every few years, so that they can disperse seeds for new plants to emerge. I'd like to have an educated conversation with Jasper, but let's put that on hold for a short while we try and get him on a proper line. In the meantime, let me go to some of the voice notes, particularly on rules of the road. Morning, Lester. I saw a traffic officer in a blue uniform waiting at the robot, and she was on her phone. I looked at her and she looked at me, and I went back to her car and I took her registration number, and she gives that registration number. So what now? because they are the ones that pulled us off the road and fine us and confiscate our phones. I think JP Smith needs to know about this. I'll gladly add or send you or direct you. I'll direct you to Zane so Zane can give you the proper number to lay your complaint at, Wendy. But thank you very much for that. Jasper Slingsby, can you hear me? And most importantly, can I hear you? Good morning, Jasper.
Morning, Lester. I can hear you.
Excellent. Give us the lay of the vegetative land that we find on the back table and why some people have opined that it's probably best to let naturally occurring fires continue to burn themselves out if it's not in direct danger of any property or personal damages, Jasper.
Yeah, I think the situation we have is a lot of the top of Table Mountain has got very, very old vegetation. Some of it hasn't burnt in, 90 plus years, which is very bad news for fynbos. Fynbos needs fire to regenerate and kind of maintain a healthy ecosystem. And there's lots of things that we have records of being up there that we're not finding anymore. And we're worried, we're not quite saying extinction yet, but we are worried that some of these things may be in serious decline. So obviously the system needs fire. I think to arrange a management burn of that area is incredibly difficult. There have been some through the years, but it's just legislatively so difficult because whoever lights the fire is held responsible. Yeah. If something else gets damaged. In terms of letting it burn. Mm. Yeah, sorry.
No, go. In terms of letting it burn.
Yeah. In terms of letting it burn, it's so hard. I wouldn't want to have to make that call as a fire manager because the weather conditions here are just so variable. And the forecast might say, oh, it's going to be nice and cool and calm for the next couple of days. And the next thing you just get a very strong wind for 2 hours that can get the whole thing out of control. So I don't really judge the fire managers for their choices. I also don't really know what's going on there. The fire's been burning for 4 or 5 days. So the criticisms that they're not letting it burn may be unfounded, unless those who are making the criticisms know more about how the fire operations are actually being conducted.
Yeah, that was one of the reasons given by Megan Taplin, that just having a supervised natural burn could change very, very quickly in a city and a region where we could have 4 seasons in a day, and all of a sudden, as you mentioned, a prolonged gust of wind sees a fire then starting to burn out of control. But you also mentioned legislation, which you also touched on, that she says, yeah, that the legislation currently is that every property owner, whether it be private or public, should under current legislation ensure that fires are brought under control, even if it is naturally occurring.
Yeah, it's a bit of a problematic piece of legislation. So it's all under the law of liability that's written around, like, your dog biting your neighbor's kid kind of scenario. But it overlooks a key issue with fire, that if you suppress fire, you're allowing the fuel to build up. And so the more you suppress the fire, the more likely you are to have an out of control wildfire someday, because then it's going to burn. And it's most likely going to burn under extreme conditions when you're going to have the least control. So it is a difficult one, because if you're constantly knocking it back, it's like, creating a dam wall out of sand, and sooner or later it's going to breach. So you really do want it to burn. If it's cooler conditions, you kind of really do want it to burn. I think the ideal from a fire management perspective is to have a kind of mosaic of burn patches, which creates natural fire breaks. That's not always ideal for the ecology and the biodiversity, but it's just such a tricky space when you're managing this kind of social ecological system in a major city.
Has the UCT fire of a few years ago taught us anything, particularly of very, very old forests and trees alongside this urban fringe, which you benefit from? We're literally a city that is built around a national Park, has the UCT fire taught us anything of how we manage fires? Of course, I can't recall the cause of that fire. It definitely wasn't naturally caused. But has the UCT fire taught us anything on how we deal with big fires that rage along an urban fringe, particularly if there are very, very old indigenous forests around them?
Yeah, I think so. So there's a few issues with that fire. One was, there were a lot of trees along the edge of the what we call a wildland urban interface. In this case, they weren't indigenous. They were mostly alien. And that was the problem, because the alien pines, eucalypts and wattles burn much more spectacularly. Most of our indigenous forest species actually are very fire resistant. They have a higher fuel moisture and just generally their arrangement of their structures is not that conducive to burning. But these alien species are from systems, ecosystems that are essentially like big fynbos. They're from ecosystems that are designed to burn or have evolved to burn. And so these eucalypts need to burn, some of them, to complete their life cycles, and the same with the pines. And so you're ending up with a much bigger fire when you have, obviously trees many meters tall happening. And that's much more dangerous for the kind of urban interface. I think another thing that caught everyone off guard at UCT was that it was a big fire under a howling northwest wind, or northeast wind, I believe, with a kind of a Bergwind conditions, hot and dry, which doesn't happen very often. So most people are planning for fires coming from the southeast, because that's the norm in fire weather in summer. And at UCT, it burnt the other way, which it's not meant to do. So I think it caught everyone off guard, but it really reminds everyone that you have to be on top of this. Fighting fires isn't about what you do on the day. It's about what you've prepared for.
Yeah.
And so you have to keep those invasive trees away from the edges. You have to keep dead leaves out of your gutters. You've got to, it's all about maintaining a defensible space. And I think that's something that we really need to work on. I think it's something that if we could possibly change this legislation so that fire managers can actually manage the fire in a way that will avoid monster fires further down the line, it's going to need to become down to landowner responsibility and people defending their own spaces.
Jasper Slingsby, really appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Senior lecturer in plant ecology at the University of Cape Town.